This is Henry Simon, bringing you another story from my files here at the Missing Persons Bureau.
In these stories of the Missing Persons Bureau, dramatized for Henry Simon by Ross Napier, names and addresses have, for obvious reasons, been changed. In one moment, the search for Edmund Marshall, address unknown. And here again is Henry Simon.
Croydon Airport, June the 8th, 1953. A crowd of newspaper photographers and reporters had gathered at one end of the tarmac as a small single-seater monoplane touched down at the other, racing to a halt some 30 yards away. The group broke up, swarming towards it, as a solitary figure climbed out of the cockpit, his face smudged with grease, his dark hair swept back by the breeze.
Hold it right there, Eddie.
Yes, let's have a big smile, Mr. Marshall.
Hi, Eddie, look at the birdie.
Oh, yes, come on, get to it.
Edmund Marshall was back in his homeland after 4 months of motor racing on the continent. He hadn't won a single race during that time, or for that matter, a place. In fact, he'd only finished in 4 races out of 18, and then well back in the field. But as the only son and heir of Sir Hilary Marshall, multimillionaire and textile magnate, his name was news, and his activities had been highlighted in every quarter of the globe. Here was a man who had no fear of death, who seemingly wished to die, yet who had everything possible to live for. Edmund Marshall, racing driver, stunt pilot, international adventurer.
Oh, bring you home, Eddie. Old boy put his foot down.
Hey, low on funds, Eddie? Pocket money been cut, eh?
We understand, Mr. Marshall. No one could possibly exist on a mere 500 a week.
All right, boys, give it a break. I'm tired and want to clean up and get changed. Now, just run along, will you? Let a man breathe some fresh air.
Hey, where's the old man, Eddie? Why isn't he here to meet you?
I wouldn't know.
Another bust-up, Eddie.
None of your business. Now get out of my way.
Oh, come on, Mr. Marshall.
Get that thing out of my face.
Hey!
You asked for it. Next man comes within swinging distance, I won't just bust his camera, I'll bust his face. No. Yes?
It's me, Eddie. Charlie Sons.
Charlie! Come on in.
Hi, fella.
Great to see you, boy. I'll just keep this locked. In case any of those newspaper morons are still hanging around.
That Grimes from the Dispatch. He's pretty cheesed off about his camera. Says he's going to sue you for a new one.
If I had my way, I'd smash them all. I can't stand reporters. They bring me out in spots.
Oh, better go easy with them, Eddie. You don't want to get their backs up.
They haven't got backs. They're all nick. In any case, why should I worry? I'm immune to their slings and arrows.
Well, some of those same arrows are mighty sharp. They can penetrate a long way.
Not through my hide. As far as I'm concerned, they can wipe me up as they please.
It's your father I was thinking of.
That's who they were thinking of, too. I never know how closely we're to the mark, either. Had we had another row, had I been ordered home with the point of a banknote.
Well, were you?
Yeah. They phoned me in Paris day before yesterday. Told me if I wasn't back by the end of the week, he'd stop my allowance. Mm. Once more, I have a horrible feeling you meant it.
Well, I can't say I blame him. You're his only son, Eddie. He thinks the moon shines out of you. It'd be the end of him if you went off and got yourself killed.
Haven't I ever told you? I'm indestructible. I lead a charmed life.
Look, Eddie, there's such a thing as having too much nerve, my boy. You turned over in your last 6 races.
7.
That Belgian one. I heard a description over the radio. The commentator was right on the spot. He practically read out an obituary. Said you didn't stand a chance of coming out of it alive. Also said it was your own fault.
So it was.
I know. I saw a newsreel of it later. You must have spun 50 feet in the air.
Flying without wings. You should try it sometime. It's quite a sensation.
Don't you feel anything, Eddie? Doesn't it make you, just a little bit shaky?
Surely. If it didn't, it wouldn't be any fun.
Fun?
I've called out of so many blazing wreckages, I've got Houdini turning cartwheels in his grave.
One of these days, you won't crawl out.
So what? I wonder much about it, will I? Besides, who wants to die in a bed?
Sit down, Edmund.
I know what you're going to say, Dad. I've heard it all before. So why not save your breath and let's have a drink instead, eh?
I didn't send for you so we could have a drink. I sent for you because I've reached the end of my rope and my patience.
Yes, sir.
You're coming into the business with me.
Coming into the... Act your age, Dad. I'll send you bankrupt in a week. I've no head for business. I never will have.
Then you'll acquire one. If not...
If not.
Your allowance will cease forthwith.
You don't mean that, Dad.
I mean it as I've never meant anything more in my entire existence. When I die, you'll come into my money. I can't prevent that, and I have no wish to. But I've a good many years left yet. And while I live, you'll either do as I say, or you won't see a penny.
That sounds like an ultimatum.
It is.
You don't think I'm capable of getting by without you? Is that it?
I'm quite sure you're not.
Then the ultimatum becomes a challenge.
Call it what you will. You can give me your decision in the morning.
You needn't wait until then, Dad. You can have it now.
Well?
2 years ago in Heidelberg, I had an argument with a German fellow. I forget what it was about. I think I kissed his girl or some such. Anyway, he challenged me to a duel with swords. He was an expert. I'd never held a rapier before in my life, but I accepted. And the next day, by arrangement, we met in a paddock at the back of a church hall. His first thrust drew blood from a gash in my forehead. I still have the scar. However, that was it. We shook hands and went our separate ways. About 6 months later, I struck him again. In a bar in Munich, of all places. We had another argument. This time it was my turn to challenge him, so I did. But there was just one difference. During those 6 months, I'd made a point of becoming something of an expert with the sword myself. On the other hand, he'd become a little rusty, with the result that the positions were reversed, and the blood that flowed was his. I've never seen a man look so surprised.
A most interesting story, but I'm afraid I don't quite see the point.
Don't you, Dad? One of these days, you might be in for a similar surprise yourself.
That same evening, Edmund Marshall left his father's house, taking nothing with him except the clothes he stood up in. The old man never saw or heard from him again. 2 years later, he suffered a severe stroke, and on his deathbed held the following conversation with his lawyer, Felix Allison, who was also one of his closest and most trusted friends.
Well, wherever the boy may be, Felix, I want you to give me your word. You'll seek him out. He's my sole beneficiary. No effort must be spared.
If he's alive, I'll find him. Rest assured of that.
When you do, tell him that I concede. He may put down his sword.
For the Missing Persons Bureau, this story had its beginning on an afternoon in the September of 1955, when I was visited here in my office by Solicitor Felix Allerton, a tall, spare man, who explained that he'd been unable to find any trace at all of Edmund Marshall, that following the boy's discussion with his father and subsequent departure some 2 years before, he'd seemingly vanished from the face of the earth.
I've made inquiries everywhere, Mr. Simon.
Mm-hmm.
I've even advertised in the press to not the slightest avail. The boy's completely disappeared.
His friends haven't seen him?
No one has.
Odd for a young man who is so very much in the public eye to fade from sight altogether.
Particularly someone like Edmund. Incidents seem to follow him about. Incidents that more often than not resulted in newspaper headlines. He was totally irresponsible. Didn't seem to care two raps what he did or how he did it, so long as there was an element of risk attached. And yet, He had definite strength of character, as he proved by cutting himself off so completely from his father.
Yes.
Despite their many differences of opinion, the old chap thought the world of him.
How old would he be now?
Just 28. I remember he was dead keen to get into the war. He came of age just a few days after peace was declared.
From the sound of him, he'd have made a natural soldier.
A trifle too natural.
What of his mother?
She died when he was only a lad. I've often thought it was largely because of that he turned out as he did. He badly needed the guidance of a maternal hand.
Did he have any romantic interests at all?
Oh, none of any consequence that I know of, although he was always a great one for the ladies.
Any particularly close friends?
About his closest, as far as I can ascertain, was a fellow named Soames, Charlie Soames. He's some sort of mechanic, has a job at Croydon Airport. As a matter of fact, I believe he used to look after Edmund's plane for him.
Well, what happened to that plane, by the way?
It's still there in the hangar. Hasn't been touched since he arrived home from Paris to see his father. The same with his cars.
Cars?
Yes, he had two. The one he raced in and the sports model. Both of them are gathering dust in the garage. The racer was actually shipped home after he left. The old man took delivery. Although, oddly enough, he could never bring himself to sell it.
I expect he regarded it as something of a memento.
Possibly. Despite his forbidding exterior, he was always a sentimentalist at heart, especially where Edmund was concerned. It's a rotten shame, you know. He's puffing off like that without a chance to square the books. By all the rules and regulations, he should have lived at least another 20 years. Just goes to show. Barely a day's illness in his life, and he's dead at 64. Didn't smoke, didn't drink, took plenty of exercise. Makes you think young Edmund might have the secret of that. Eat, drink, and be merry. For tomorrow, we die.
Henry Simon returns to continue this story in just a moment. And here again is Henry Simon.
Find a man of whom nothing has been seen or heard for over 2 years. Not an ordinary man, but one whose passion for dangerous living has made him something of a legend. That was a task which now confronted us. A task which to prove both difficult and intriguing. Following Allison's departure, I sent for Agent Bob Hunter, who is then in London, and with whom I discussed the various aspects of this case.
Yeah, these guys really get me, Chief.
Huh? What guys?
Well, a young marshal. Not a nerve in the buddies. Ran across a couple of them in the army. You know, madcap do-or-die types.
Uh-huh.
Do things that curl a normal person's hair without so much as the flicker of an eyelid. They weren't just showing off, either. Just something inside them. Some sort of a driving force made them press on regardless. The crazy part of it was they usually came through unscathed.
Always says the man who hangs back or takes the biggest risks.
Yeah, well, I kind of sort of favored staying in between. You know what I mean? This hero stuff for me.
Know exactly what you mean. However, reverting back to the case in hand, I think perhaps this Charlie Soames might be well worth questioning.
Charlie? Oh, he's a mechanic guy.
That's right. Mm. Works at Croydon Airport. So it shouldn't be too difficult to get hold of. Here's a photograph of Marshall, by the way. Now, that's Soames with him, apparently.
Yeah. Buddies together. Okay, Chief, I'm on my way.
Charlie Soames was a shortish man, stockily built, with thin, sandy hair receding at the temples, and a freckled countenance which blended with his fraying, oil-spattered overalls and the old Air Force beret which he wore on his head.
Yeah, that's right, Mr. Hunter. Eddie and I were pals for years. But don't ask me where he is now, because I haven't the faintest idea.
Uh-huh.
I haven't set eyes on him since that day he got in from Paris. I remember there were about 50 reporters lined up to meet him. He smashed one of the photographer's cameras.
Well, publicity shy, huh?
Well, you wouldn't think it the way his face was always in the papers, but he was. He hated being made a fuss of.
He came back from Paris to see his father, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, he wasn't any too popular in that direction. What happened between them, I wouldn't know. I never saw either of them again.
Knew the old guy?
That I did. A whiter man you'd never hope to meet.
Mm.
He was hard, but he was fair. Always he had a good word for you. Yeah, too bad his dying so sudden. I didn't even know he was sick till I read about the funeral.
Tell me a little bit more about Eddie. Did he have many friends?
Not too many, no. Now, he wasn't easy to get along with. unless you knew how to take him. Hmm? He used to have these black moods and nothing was ever right. Yet other times he was as meek and mild as a kitten.
What about his love life, or didn't he have one?
Oh, there was usually a girl in the picture somewhere. He had about a dozen in every city. It got so he couldn't remember their names.
Well, there wasn't anybody special?
Well, the only ones who ever meant anything to him were Linda and that Italian actress.
An Italian actress?
Yeah. I never met her, but he told me plenty about her. What was her name? Virago? Varesco, that was it. Alida Varesco. Allie, he called her.
Alida Varesco.
Yeah. She hung out in Rome somewhere. That's as much as I can tell you. I don't think she was any great star, but from what Eddie said, she used to do okay.
Hmm. Oh, well, this other one, Linda, was it?
Linda Forrest. Oh, she was really the goods. He was teaching her to fly at one time. Used to bring her out here a lot. She caught on pretty quick, too.
So what happened to her?
Nothing that I know of. I suppose she's still around.
And their relationship didn't come to anything.
Oh, no, no. Linda was too sensible to get herself involved with someone like Eddie. She went out with him quite a bit, but that's where it stopped.
Yeah, how about his feelings?
Oh, he was pretty keen on her, but I don't think he was ever in love with her or anything like that. She was plenty of fun, and he liked being with her. Same with this Allie. Only I've got an idea she might have been more his way than he was hers. She was always writing to him.
From Rome?
Yeah.
Getting back to Linda, you wouldn't know where I could reach her, would you?
Oh, no, I don't know where she lived, but she worked for the Clarion.
For the Evening Clarion?
Yes, she was a reporter of some kind.
Well, I thought he didn't care for reporters.
She was the exception. He used to say she was the only one he ever met who never got personal.
At the offices of the Evening Clarion in Fleet Street, Hunter was told that Linda Forrest had left the Clarion some months before to join the staff of the Daily Gazette, which likewise had offices in Fleet Street, and where he duly caught up with her. A strikingly attractive brunette, slim and very well proportioned.
I'm afraid I can't tell you much more than you already know, Mr. Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
Edmund was just one of those people you couldn't anticipate. He was here one minute and gone the next. Sometimes he'd be away for weeks, sometimes months. This time, it's years.
You had no word from him at all?
Oh, not a line.
Well, he don't seem particularly put out.
Why should I? We're no more than good friends, and I hope we'll never be anything less. Well, I doubt that my husband will be too happy if I began seeing much of him again.
Your husband?
I've been married almost a year now. As a matter of fact, it was through Edmund I met Kim. They were at Harrow together.
Kim being your husband?
Kim Cheney, he's an architect.
Well, the place is a different complexion, I think.
Rather, yes.
I don't suppose you ever mentioned knowing an Italian actress.
Allie?
Yeah, that's her.
Oh, very sweet girl. I liked her immensely.
You actually met her?
Oh, when I was in Rome, about 3 years ago. She had a small part in a play at the Andrea Doria. Edmund took me backstage, and we had quite a long chat, the three of us. Then later, we went on to a party together at some film producer's home. No, it was a wonderful evening. We ended up at Ali's flat drinking some dreadful concoction that had absinthe in it. I forget what it was called, but oh, it surely was potent.
Mm.
The next morning I had a head the size of the Colosseum.
Yeah, you don't happen to recall the address, do you, of the flat?
Mm, I think. It was in the Via Fiordorelli. Quite a large block. It backed onto the Tiber and there was a sort of supermarket place next door.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you couldn't miss it if you went there. It's about twice as high as any other building in the street, or it was then.
Mm-hmm. What was the setup exactly? I mean, ostensibly you were both Marshall's girlfriends. Would make things a little bit awkward?
Not at all. We got on famously. Oh, but let me set you straight. I was never Edmund's girlfriend. Our friendship was purely platonic.
Oh, I see. And what about the Allie?
Oh, she adored him, fool that she was.
Well, didn't he return her feelings?
Oh, he may have done. I wouldn't really know. But he wasn't the type to get serious about. Not for anyone who wanted to stay sane. Many thinks it's funny to turn double somersaults in a racing car at 200 miles an hour is hardly a good bet for any woman.
Yeah, see what you mean.
Mark, you, there were occasions when it wasn't easy to maintain indifference toward him.
Mm-hmm.
He was an extremely fascinating person in more ways than one. And I doubt in the world that if I'd relaxed my guard with him for an instant, I'd have fallen harder and faster than a lead weight from the Dome of St. Paul's.
At 9:30 the following morning, Hunter boarded a plane for Rome, arriving in that city some 6 hours later, and proceeding from the airport by cab to the Via Fiordelli, where he had very little trouble in locating the block of flats in question. A 10-story building backed by the Tiber, and flanked on one side by a supermarket, and on the other by a war memorial. In the foyer was an inquiry or service desk, and behind it, reading a newspaper, sat an elderly, graying-haired man.
Pardon me.
Desidera qualche cosa, signor?
Holy, Robert, my boy, here's a big opportunity. Signorina Alida Varesco, is sta qua?
Sì, signor. Piano 8, appartamento 43.
Doing a little great. Could you give me that a little slower? Più lento, per favore.
Appartamento 43, piano 8.
You know what? Four. Piano 8, yeah.
Appartamento 43.
How about 40? 40?
3.
Ah, 43. 43.
Sì, 43.
She was a tall, raven-haired girl with full scarlet lips and a milk-white complexion. Her eyes were large, set wide apart, and she was dressed in a blue satin house gown, the hem of which brushed the floor as she ushered the agent into a tastefully furnished drawing room, addressing him in excellent English as she did so.
Make yourself comfortable, Signor Hunter. Can I offer you a drink?
No, thank you. Oh, I'd serve one of the nuts, if I may.
Please do. They're fresh from the market today.
Thank you.
So, you are looking for Eddie?
That's right. I thought maybe you might have heard from him.
You are his father?
No, his father's dead.
Oh,
suffered a sudden stroke a month or so back.
Don Nima Cristo, terrible.
Yeah.
Oh, it will be a bad shock to Eddie.
Do you know where he is?
If you will give me time to change, I will take you to him.
Take me to him?
The hospital is not far from here.
Hospital?
Oh, but of course, you would not know. There was an accident. He was badly injured.
Well, what kind of accident? When?
He was working as a flyer with Adolfo's air circus.
An air circus?
His plane crashed. It is a miracle he is still alive. But the miracle, I think, is not a good one.
What do you mean?
His legs, both of them, they are gone.
En route to Rome's Garibaldi Hospital on the fringe of the Villa Borghese, Alida Varesco told Hunter how Edmund Marshall had come to Rome shortly after the break with his father, of the various jobs which he'd held during the previous 2 years, and finally of the disaster that had overcome him, a disaster which had culminated in the amputation of his legs and left him a helpless cripple for life.
We're short of chairs, Mr. Hunter. Rest on the end of the bed, will you? You too, Ally. There's plenty of room. After all, I'm only half here.
Eddie, please.
So the old boy's dead, eh? He didn't live as long as he thought he would. The old... He used to tell me he'd live to be 100. You know, I thought he would. Why didn't someone send for me? What was I told?
Nobody knew where you were. There wouldn't have been time anyway. It was all over pretty quickly.
Just think, for 4 months, I've been lying here on my back, wanting to die, not knowing how, and he goes and beats me to it.
Oh, you're a long way from dying yet.
Don't you be too sure of that.
Look, you've never turned your back in a challenge before. Why should you start now? This is it, Eddie, the supreme challenge. Your father died believing you proved yourself ready to take over where he left off, but he was wrong. To date, you haven't proved a thing. Oh, sure, you managed to get by without him for 2 years. You made him eat his words. But if he was alive, there's no saying they wouldn't catch in his throat. You'd still have to make him swallow them.
In Henry Simon returns to conclude this story in just a moment. And here again is Henry Simon.
A further 4 months went by before Edmund Marshall finally returned to London to take over the reins of his father's business. It was his own decision so to do, and he's since proved himself more than worthy of the task. Aided, I might add, by Ali Davaresco, who is now his wife. And now, as always, this is Henry Simon, inviting you to meet me here again, and for the present, bidding you au revoir.